Welcome to Ghost Biz here on Nova 103.5 on the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel, and every week I talk to the finance ghost about what is going on the markets around us with a focus on the JSE. And we take a look at today at an interesting one, Ghost. And of course, if you are interested in anything that Ghost is chatting about, you can go check out his most excellent series of newsletters. Go to ghostmail.co.za. You can subscribe to any one of a number of different pieces of content put out by the Finance Ghost, all of them really top-notch. So reading in this morning's Ghost Bites, the Absa saga. Now, Absa is a bank that doesn't operate anymore here in the Namibian territory. It did have a presence in the early days, right early in independence and prior, but withdrew. All the other South African banks, Nedbank, Standard Bank, and FNB are operational here in the country, but Absa isn't. But Absa has had a tough old time of it, and the markets can be sometimes quite unkind. Give us a little bit of an update on what's going on with the beleaguered Absa.
Hi, Gary. Banking, always a good place to start. Thanks for having me on the show. And yes, an interesting one on Absa. They came out with an announcement that their CEO, who was quite recently appointed, actually, that's Ari Rautenbach, he is going to take early retirement from that role. And he's going to step down from the CEO role in October. And then he's going to literally get paid to sit around and do absolutely nothing for several months. He will serve gardening leave, which is one of those wonderful concepts that you don't see come up too often, actually. Sometimes companies kind of downplay it and they say, oh, you know, we'll stick around in a consulting role. Here, Absa literally says gardening leave. And I can't help but wonder if that's because, you know, the last time one of their execs left, it was Jason Quinn, who was overlooked for the CEO role at Absa, having been there for years and years and years. And he then got poached basically by Nedbank for their CEO job. So not a great leadership story at Absa at the moment. They overlooked Quinn, put in Mr. Rautenbach, and now he is taking early retirement. So that's a bit awkward. And what was also kind of awkward is the share price rallying rather strongly in response to this news. So, you know, that's your reference to the markets not caring about feelings, especially not feelings of outgoing executives. Investors are quite quick to make their feelings known. If someone is leaving and the share price rallies, well, you can deduce for yourself how people felt. What is also interesting is that Absa's numbers are a bit of a struggle right now. I mean, Standard Bank, we saw numbers recently where, you know, they are facing pressure in Africa. The sort of local currency problem, you know, is a real issue with those African currencies depreciating. Standard Bank also has issues in China, though, at the moment, which is, you know, for Absa, thankfully, not a problem they have. But Absa's African numbers were worse than Standard Bank's numbers in terms of percentage change. And that is essentially why Absa's headline earnings per share is actually down 5%. Return on equity has gone the wrong way from 15.7 to 14%. So not a good news story at all at Absa. It's quite interesting as well, though, that they kept their dividend the same. They have lots of room in their payout ratio to do it. So this is often why companies only have a small payout ratio. So that's basically calculated as the dividend per share divided by headline earnings per share, or what percentage of earnings are they paying as a dividend. So they could keep their dividend the same year on year at 685 cents, despite headline earnings per share coming down by 5%. Now we'll see what happens with another new CEO coming in at Absa. I don't know if Hannah's, they've had several CEOs in the last few years, so it's really not ideal. Charles Roussan will take the interim CEO role. He currently runs Absa's corporate and investment bank, so it's an internal promotion there. And maybe they can just get some stability. The market hates it when the CEO role changes year after year after year. They really now need a period of one CEO who can deliver on a strategy, and we'll see if Absa gets it right.
Keeping with the theme of beleaguered, and we have spoken about MTN a number of times over the last few months, they've had an absolute nightmare in some of the Northern African countries. They've had good news in other territories, but they have released numbers for 6 months to June 2024, and an interesting story that if it wasn't for currency and the forex markets, that actually would be okay, but taking into account what has happened in that space, MTN a little bit backs against the wall at the moment. Give us more detail.
Yes, MTN is another really interesting one. So thanks for asking about that. And you've got to be super careful with the kind of local currency versus reported currency measurements. So MTN subsidiaries release results each quarter effectively. And that ranges from Nigeria as the really important one. Ghana is another big one, all the way down to the smaller stuff like Uganda, for example. And the performance variation across the various subsidiaries is quite breathtaking, actually. So I always, or the first thing I do is look at the service revenue growth in each country, but then immediately I compare it to what the inflation rate was in that country. It's not impressive if you've grown your revenue by 20% in one of these countries, but inflation was 20%. You haven't actually achieved any real growth at all. And unfortunately, when inflation in one of these countries is running at 20%, you can be sure that the currency itself has depreciated substantially, not just against, you know, the big dog in the room like the dollar, but even the rand. And that's the problem for not just MTN, but the banks, as I referenced in the previous snippet, you know, Absa, Standard Bank, when they've got these African businesses and these currencies are continuously depreciating, it's a problem. The local currency growth rates look impressive, but on a real basis, they aren't always. Now, some of MTN's African subsidiaries are quite good, actually, and, you know, well done to them. Unfortunately, Nigeria is not one of them. The Nigerian economy is a huge problem. And the double whammy in Nigeria, which I think we've talked about before on the show, is that a lot of the expenses for MTN Nigeria are actually linked to the dollar, particularly when it comes to capex. So there's a double whammy there of not only are the profits in Nigeria effectively not worth as much each year on a global stage because of what the currency is doing, but the weakening of the currency also directly impacts the profits in Nigeria, even before you adjust for, you know, what the net profit looks like when you apply the currency. So you've got to be quite careful when you are making these comparisons. And unfortunately, MTN's South African business, which is the stable one with, you know, the most stable currency in the group, is very, very mature and very slow growth. So this is the problem for telcos. This is why I'm bearish on them generally, is the only way they can really grow in Africa is by chasing growth in very volatile regions with extremely volatile currencies. And, you know, results vary from very good to really very bad. And they've actually had to extend their BEE deal now, that's MTN Zakhele Futhi, by 3 years, because that deal references the MTN share price, and the share price has come off so hard that when that deal matures in November, it's on a collision course right now to mature underwater, which means basically worthless. The debts won't be covered by, you know, the underlying shares, and the BEE investors would get nothing. So they need to now avoid that reputational and financial disaster. Yeah, it's tough times at MTN. It's a tough story, and they really do need some improvement, specifically in Nigeria, if nothing else, because that subsidiary is big enough to ruin the group numbers.
Also, interesting lessons to be learned at Sasol. Sasol have released results for the year ended June, but there doesn't seem to be anything in the way of dividends. And that has largely to do with the number of impairments that have been put through through those numbers. Just perhaps give us the detail of what is going on there, because if we're to look at the final numbers, it looks pretty dire, but that is as a result of accounting practices largely. And perhaps just bring us up to date with how it actually is going with Sasol.
Yeah, I see we're focusing on the big names in this week's show, but nothing wrong with that because that is where we see so much activity, let's face it. And Sasol was pretty big news this week because they have changed their dividend policy. Now, when a blue chip changes dividend policy essentially completely, it's actually quite big news because a lot of institutional buyers, and I would imagine a lot of pensioners and more yield-focused investors, are buying the shares because they understand, or they think they understand, how Sasol will approach dividends, and they believe that there will be dividends sort of over and over again and will hopefully grow over time, although that part of is, of course, not guaranteed by any means. However, in the year ended June, which Sasol has now released results for, they've indicated that their dividend policy is now changing. The first test in the dividend policy is how much net debt they have on the balance sheet. So they've got to be below $4 billion before they will even consider paying a dividend. They are currently on $4.1 billion, so very conveniently slightly above that threshold, and therefore there is no final dividend here as they look to repair their balance sheet. The other change they've made is they will not be referencing the dividend to headline earnings per share anymore. Instead, they will be referencing it to free cash flow. Now, that sounds logical enough because if you don't have cash, how do you pay a dividend? But it also has quite large ramifications for the dividends going forward because free cash flow is net of capex. Sasol is a capex heavy group, which means free cash flow can kind of be all over the place in any given year. So what Sasol is basically saying here is our dividend, number one, is not guaranteed, and number two, may well be more volatile going forward because we need to manage our balance sheet. We can't just be this cash cow for investors. Now, the market didn't like that, but I think a lot of that was also just churning out dividend-focused investors and perhaps other investors who don't really care about dividends coming in. And the Sasol share price closed, I think it was roughly 6% on the day. So obviously not a great day for Sasol, and they are dealing with a lot of challenges their side. It really is a tough business model, and they've had a very tough time of things, especially in the chemicals side of the business. They've had to recognize some truly earth-shattering impairments. But a lot of this is also just a new management team setting the base for themselves to grow going forward. You know, it's ideal to come in and say, okay, well, in the year where we kind of took over, you know, these were the horrible numbers, and look how clever we are. In the years subsequent to this, we went and grew so beautifully off that very low base. I guess time will tell. I'm not a Sasol shareholder. It just feels too hard to me, to be honest. And this dividend change, I think, is going to cause even more churn in the shareholder register, and is quite a big deal. Also for Sasol BEE investors, because the one benefit of the Sol B1 structure is it's basically the same as a Sasol share, but it just trades at a big discount. So it was getting effectively like double the dividend yield historically that an ordinary shareholder would get. If the dividends are not guaranteed anymore, you've got to ask some tough questions about what the investment thesis is for Sol B1 as well. So yeah, interesting week and some very interesting stuff as well for the BE structures, like the MTN one, the Sasol one. These blue chips are no guarantee of success whatsoever.
All right, guys, thank you for your thoughts and insights. Lots to unpack there on three really big brands for the African continent, and big parts of the JSE as well. You can join us again next week, myself, Gary Struble, and the Finance Ghost, as we take a look at what's going on in the markets, the things that will definitely impact your investments in one way or another. And if you're interested in investing and trading, you can always get along to ghostmail.co.za and stay up to date with all the latest news. That's it for Ghostbiz here on the Business Report.